Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It is a pleasure to be with you today. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you're having a great start to your Monday. And I am very happy to welcome from Celtics Blog, the voice of the Celtics Blog podcast, as well as one of the wonderful, talented writers over there, a plethora of writers. But this guy probably is one of the more talented minds I've come across in my few years of covering basketball. His name is Adam Taylor. Adam, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hey, Sean, thanks for the nice intro, man. That means a lot. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing today?
Can't complain at all, man. It's a great day. We're recording this on Sunday, but of course we're, you know, talking about the Celtics and Grizzlies game that'll go on tonight. You know, the Locker Room app where I mentioned, you know, a few guests that have been kind enough to come on the show where I host my weekly show for Locked On Grizzlies. Adam does it for the Celtics. Adam is one of the best people that I've had the chance to interact with and get to know a little bit. Just a phenomenal basketball mind. So it's a pleasure to have him on the show. Of course, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC on Twitter. We'll make sure to get Adam's information to the rest of our listeners so that they can follow his great work. But Adam, I just want to start here. I've gotten to know you a bit. We obviously have discussed basketball, not only the Celtics, but the Grizzlies, which we'll get into in a second. But just kind of your background, what got you into basketball? Being from Great Britain, England, things such as that, what got you into basketball yourself?
Man, I've never been one to like be a soccer fan. Like, if you grow up here, soccer's kind of, it's how I imagine football to be in the South. Like, it's just ubiquitous with every, like, everywhere you go, football's there. It's the same here with soccer. And it was never like, I was never really into it. I just didn't see the appeal in watching people play for nearly 2 hours and then maybe there's no goal or there's one goal. And it just seemed really like tedious to me. And then one day we started getting like one basketball game a week. So the TV networks over here would choose one of the bigger games of the week and they'd put it on like public TV. And this was back when Michael Jordan was still playing and he was at the height of his fame. So generally it was a Bulls game and they'd usually pick like a Chicago Lakers or a Chicago Boston. And then if it wasn't a Chicago game, it'd be like a Boston Lakers. It was usually one of the prime time games. So I remember sitting at home watching a Celtics Bulls game and I got really into it. I loved how fast it was. I loved how diverse the offenses could be from playing pick and roll to going into post-ups and just the speed of the game. So I started like making that a weekly thing every week. Myself and my mum would sit down and we'd sit there and watch this game because it was on a decent time because the game was probably 4 days old at that point. And the more I watched, the more I really got into it. But I didn't want to be like everybody else and support the Bulls and like follow Michael Jordan. Like as much as I love Jordan, it was very much like I want to be a bit more individualistic than that. You know, when you kind of like, you're trying to be an individual by going against the crowd, but really it's not that individualistic to do. So I started following the Celtics. And then over the years, basketball started to become more accessible for me via the internet. So I'd be able to catch highlights on YouTube. League Pass became available to us over here. So then I could keep up with the team as easily as people in America and stateside. And that was pretty much where it went for me. I just slowly grew to follow the game as well as have the access to the games. And then I just kind of immersed myself in basketball culture as I was hitting my teenage years.
And that's awesome. It's awesome to hear how different folks got into basketball, you know, from wherever they are. Basketball is a very international sport, and with everybody connected much closer than they were in the past, it's awesome to hear how folks fell in love with the game. And one thing I'll say about Adam before we get into the show, in the first segment, we're going to discuss the crazy week that it was for the Celtics, as well as, you know, from an outsider's view, Adam has done, you know, he's done some podcasts on the Grizzlies, get his takes on Ja. In the second segment, you're going to see Adam's strength on display. Adam is one of the best that I've come across at being able to talk about the schemes and schematics of basketball as it pertains to certain players. We're going to talk to him about several of the Grizzlies' wing options just from what he's looked at, how they're succeeding this year. And in the third segment, we'll talk about some trade deadline scenarios for the Grizzlies and Celtics, as well as the game itself. But Adam, let's get into it. So I thought that the Grizzlies had a crazy week because it was coming of age. They had some very tough games. Overall, They missed opportunities, but some success. But in no way compares to the Celtics weeks. Just kind of got us through just how heart-wrenching of a week it has been for Celtics fans.
It's been a tough week. I think that a lot of the fans are more upset with the mentality on show from the players, the lack of effort that we've seen, the lack of pace that they're playing with. So they've lost, they're on a 3-game losing streak right now. Earlier this week, Indiana University fired their head coach, and Brad Stevens, being an Indiana native and having been on record previously stating that a dream job for him was to be head coach of IU, that kind of obviously started a narrative of, is Brad Stevens going to leave Boston to go and coach Indiana University? So then we had all of this as well. And what was really confusing for me was, after every loss, there's a very large swell of support for firing Brad Stevens and looking for a different coach. But the moment that everybody thinks that Brad Stevens is actually going to leave, everybody starts to panic. And there was this mad hysteria of, will Brad go? Will he stay? Where will Boston turn if Brad does leave? Luckily, Brad turned around and said that he's committed to Boston. But then what we'd hoped that would have happened was Brad reaffirming his commitment to the team would have spurred the team onto a good win in their last game. But it just hasn't been that way. They've been very poor on offense, very disconnected on defense. The speed that they play with is not like what you've seen in previous Celtics teams over the last 4 or 5 years. They're very slow, very lackadaisical in their execution. It's just been a really weird season for them. But over the last week or two, it's been becoming more apparent that this team, as currently constructed, isn't going to get the job done.
And I imagine it is a bit frustrating to see from a Celtics fan's perspective. And I don't mean that as a negative, Adam, but Jaylen Brown really has emerged. I mean, you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who have both made the All-Star team this year. And I don't think it is any argument. When you think of a combination of teammates under the age of 25, Boston has it. Boston has the best combination of teammates. And I imagine seeing Tatum maintain the over, probably being at a higher level than many thought he would be at this age, at the age of 19. I'm kidding. But all joking aside, when it comes to Jason and Jaylen both, you're talking about all-star, all-NBA talents playing with each other. It's had to be a bit frustrating to see how they've progressed or maintained their excellent play, but just, you know, what's trying to work around them, it's just not there. Kind of how frustrating has that been to see the team kind of, you know, sputter, but yet your two best players are progressing as far as their all-star futures go?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that the front office and the coaching staff are definitely trying to develop both of those guys as playmakers and develop their ability to run offensive sets and actually set other guys up. So this year, we'll see a lot more of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum running pick and roll as a ball handler. We'll see a lot more of them guys flashing middle up to offer secondary creation. But what's happening is, I don't know if there's a lack of trust between them and the lower guys on the totem pole type of thing. Like, so we're seeing a lot of individualistic play where it's, you'll run a high pick and roll, and if the defense kills the advantage that pick and roll creates, then we're seeing a lot of isolation basketball. It is quite frustrating. Like Brad has kind of spoke about the need to move the ball more. The fans are slowly starting to say that Tatum and Brown need to trust their teammates more. But at the same time, with those two guys are the reason that the Celtics were coming into the season billed as contenders. And there just doesn't seem to be enough supporting cast around them. If you look at that bench, a lot of it consists of first year, second year, and third year guys. And even third year guys haven't played enough basketball for me to really consider them as veterans yet. I mean, if you look at Robert Williams in his third year, he'd played less in 2 years coming into this year than what Grant Williams had played in one due to injuries. So there's a lot of development happening on that team at the moment. And this is where the biggest issue for Boston stands. They've straddled a timeline between contending and rebuilding very successfully for the last 3 or 4 years. They've lost some stars. Kyrie Irving's left, Gordon Hayward's left, Al Horford's left. So what that's left them with now is the two young guys that they were developing to be the future of the franchise have kind of had to step into the forefront, probably a year, maybe 18 months too early, if we're being honest with ourselves. And now we're seeing the struggles that come with guys learning to be leaders, learning to navigate a full season, not being the second or third option, but being the 1A and 1B on an offense that's expected to excel. And I think those expectations alone are a large part of why the Celtics are really struggling to find their groove and to really pick up the pace on offense, because everything at the moment seems to be too thought out and not natural enough. They're not playing with feel, And that's causing a lot of tentativeness, which is allowing defenses time to just sniff out any offensive advantage.
That's a really thorough and logical perspective, and I get it. You know, you bring up a great point. You know, if their bench is so young, you would expect for it to take a year or two to really be able to develop it, you know, to be the bench that needs to support it, or you get a veteran sixth or seventh man who could really excel. So I can see now, you know, it makes sense as to why there has been some struggles this year. You know, a team here in Memphis, you know, that is definitely, you know, they've had their struggles, but they've had their successes, obviously probably not as far down the competitive timeline as the Boston Celtics are, but we talk about those young combinations that are under 25. Tatum and Brown obviously being number one in the league, in my opinion. But right up there, probably not far from them, is Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. But Adam, from an outsider's perspective, and you are someone who has done some research and work on the Grizzlies, we'll discuss that in the second segment more thoroughly. But just your thoughts on Ja, kind of what you've seen from him. He's coming up on the first 100 games of his career. Just your thoughts on Ja, and if you want to sprinkle Jaren in as well, your thoughts on how the future of the Grizzlies looks with their young duo that we're also excited about here in Memphis.
I mean, Ja's potentially the best point guard in the league in 5 years, right? I don't feel like there's much pushback that you can have on that. Maybe some people would point more to SGA as more of a complete point guard, but I just feel like Ja Morant's got that superstar potential, and his ability to just beat guys off the dribble, to play off ball and catch the finish off the catch in the lane with some beautiful dunks that are just jaw-dropping. His ability to conjure up moments of magic while dribbling in the lane and be able to just flash these amazing passes that people can't see. And then he's also got a jumper that's developing more and more what seems to be every game. I think that with Memphis's point guard situation at the moment, I know you guys have had great point guards in the past, that Mike Conley being a good name to use there, but I do think that Ja Morant's going to be a guy that once he's entering his prime, he will guarantee you playoff positions every year that he's on your team, as long as he's healthy and he's got a decent supporting cast around him. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a little bit more, I wouldn't say precarious, but I feel like there's some development there that could really help expedite his game. And then the two-man game that could develop between those two as a pick-and-pop threat with Jaren, some spacing that Jaren can provide both as a three-point shooter and a role threat. I think that the two of those guys, if you can find a third guy that would be a tertiary playmaker and scorer, I think that you guys are looking at potential second, third seed in the West, depending on how other teams develop as well. I think 4 years down the line, you guys are going to be one of the more dominant teams if you keep this core together and you continue to draft as excellently as you have done over the last few years.
Appreciate the kind words, Adam. But the thing with Adam is that he and Brandon Nunes, it's Nunes, right? I can't remember if it's Nunez or Nunes over who covers the Kings. Y'all did the Brandon Bear Nunes. Brandon Nunes. I always get his name wrong. Did a mini podcast series called The Bear Necessities here earlier this year. And his kind words with Ja and Jaren certainly do come with validation with how much research they did on certain players, but specifically how the current players on the roster, both at the two and the three, could fit with Ja. Coming up, we're going to talk with Adam and get his take on one of the more debated topics among Grizzlies fans here recently. Don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically collaborated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush. The Gen 4 Theragun doesn't just feel good. It gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out or an injury or just the stresses of everyday life, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design make you feel like you're holding something for the future. Just go to their site and check it out. The Theragun app learns from your behaviors and suggests guided routines. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, and hundreds of thousands of customers, and myself. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/LockedOn right now and get your Theragun Gen 4 today. That's Theragun.com/LockedOn, Theragun.com/LockedOn. The first 3 days of the NCAA tournament are now in the books, and we are here to finish out the second round today. And the thing about it is that if you're a fan and a part of your fandom includes betting and wagering on sports, there's no better place that has you covered for times like this than BetOnline.ag. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Whenever you look across the sports spectrum now, you got the NBA in the second half of its season, the NHL getting its home stretch, obviously college basketball, the UFC, baseball right around the corner. BetOnline even covers award shows, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. And when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's using the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit betonline.ag today. Get all the news, get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So Adam and Brandon did a podcast. I want to say, what was it, Adam? Earlier this year? Was it towards the first of this year? End of last year? I can't remember. It's been a few months. Like
early January, I think.
Early January. It's called The Bare Necessities, and I'll make sure that we get the Twitter handle from Adam. But just an excellent breakdown of several of the Grizzlies players via the locker room app. But that's really one of the reasons why I wanted the chance to talk with Adam. And, you know, Adam, you know, y'all discuss players such as Dylan Brooks. You discuss players such as DeAnthony Melton and Grayson Allen. And one of the things that really has stood out is the fact that Taylor Jenkins, our head coach, has been preferring a shooter next to Ja. So he's been starting Grayson or Desmond Bane at the two-guard position with Dylan at the three, and then DeAnthony Melton has found himself not getting many minutes a lot of nights, though it's clear that he's the most valuable player overall. But we'll start with Grayson. It seems like that there's been a lot of success in the first quarter because Grayson is hitting his threes. From what you've looked at with Grayson, what makes him successful to hit his threes, but also what potentially makes him a bit of a liability at times as, you know, opposing teams start to adjust to him? And if he takes away, if you take away his shot, why could he become a bit of a liability in your opinion?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that playing a shooter next to Ja Morant is probably the best way to go. You need as much spacing as possible to give Ja the room to attack in the lane and to penetrate himself. If you start filling that up with other slashers or post players, then you're kind of negating Ja's best attributes at the moment. So it makes perfect sense that you try and play a 4-out or a 5-out offense and let Ja get to work off the catch and then the rip through. And that to me means Grayson Allen probably is one of your better options. I think that Grayson's got a steady shot. His mechanics are good. His release point's quite steady. I don't think it's too high. It could be a little bit higher, but he's fluid in his release. The only thing I do think with Allen is his ability to attack closeouts due to, it's like he's got hops. Like he can dunk and he can get up, but he doesn't have that first step to beat the closeouts consistently. He's not explosive in that manner. So if teams start taking away that shot, then now I don't know what Grayson Allen gives you on offense, unless you can find him cutting towards the hoop and he's got an open lane to dunk without much contest, then his offensive output will be quite limited. And at that point, then you can really start putting pressure on clogging those driving lanes for Ja. I don't think that 3-point shot's consistency that you've seen over the last few weeks is manageable. I don't think it can be there consistently. I think Grayson projects to me personally as a more streaky shooter. He'll have hot spells, he'll have cold spells. And I'm very curious to see how the Grizzlies kind of react and adjust once Grayson starts going through a cold spell to ensure that Ja does have the driving lanes available to him that he has when Grayson's hitting those shots. I think that as a secondary creator, he's got some potential, especially as a guy that can come off pin downs, catch the ball, and then redirect into somebody that's driving to the lane or somebody that's fading off a ghost screen or off a pick and pop. I think that there's some form of upside there too. My biggest concern with Grayson Allen will be how he attacks closeouts, how he finds space for himself, because at the minute, to me, he does project just as a catch and shoot jump shooter. So my biggest concern is, if you need him to be able to create for himself, or as I say, attack a closeout and then pull up after a dribble or two, does the consistency stay there at that point? And I don't think it does. I think he needs to have his feet set before he pulls up. He doesn't strike me as a great movement shooter. So there are concerns that I do think that there's definitely an upgrade to be had, and maybe Bane is that upgrade. I think Bane is probably a better guy shooting off movement, and you'll be able to run him in some off-ball actions. But I think Allen has that experience over Bane at the moment, and that's probably why he's getting the nod at the moment to start over Bane.
I think that's excellent analysis, and you put it there. You know, it comes down to the shot, and I do think that Bane is the better natural shooter than Grayson, but Grayson's shown some improvement, though I think that his upside is limited. He's shown some improvement in adding value where he can, but it's not, let's just be honest. There are times, if his shot's not falling, there's not a lot of value that's added. But one player that who does not need his shot necessarily to fall that often, that has a big impact when he's in the game, every single time since he's been with the Grizzlies, is DeAnthony Melton. Adam, we've seen some offensive progression from him. Don't know if the first half numbers were going to be sustainable, but pull-up shooting, the ability to drive, just the overall awareness and the depth of his offensive game has certainly progressed this season. We really think a lot of times with how young DeAnthony Melton is, Marcus Smart, his style of play, his game is actually something that could be that DeAnthony Melton could eventually become in time. But when it comes to us saying we think that Melton is our most valuable two guard and that he should be playing the most minutes, that's what makes us the most successful. When you were looking at his game and when you were breaking him down, do you get that feeling as well?
I definitely feel like he's the most valuable in terms of upside. I think that he's one of the better perimeter defenders in the league already, and that's only going to, one of the better guard perimeter defenders in the league already. And I feel like that's only going to improve with more reps and as he gets more feel and starts to understand opposing teams' rotations a little bit more. I think he'll be a great point of attack defender. He already is a great point of attack defender, but I think he could keep improving. His ability to score off movement, he's got a really good feel around the rim, can explode a little bit quicker than what Grayson Allen can score a little bit off movement. He can add a floater to his game. I think he's going to become quite good in the mid-range. Attacking closeouts with that floater game could become a very good development that he can add to his offensive repertoire. I think that his ball handling needs to be tightened up a little bit, but that'll come with time and reps and some off-seasons where he can really put that to the test. Marcus Smart, to me, feels like a really good comparison. I do think that Melton's probably got a better shooting mechanic than what Smart does and will probably end up being the better shooter out of the two. I don't know if he will ever be the level of competitor to what Marcus Smart is, where Marcus Smart's willing to run head first through somebody, but that's not always a good thing. That Marcus Smart misses multiple games a year through making stupid decisions. So maybe if Melton can take the best of Marcus Smart's defensive intensity but keep that ridiculousness out of his game, then Melton could actually become more of a longevity guy in the league, because you know these guys that play like Marcus Smart does, where they're throwing themselves onto the floor, throwing themselves into elbows, their careers are generally a few years shorter than most because that takes a toll on your body. I think Melton's offense is more diverse than what Marcus Smart's is. Marcus is very much a pull-up free guy, and I don't really have much trust around rim with Marcus compared to where I would with Melton's development. I think Melton could become a very legitimate two-level scorer around the rim and from free, and if he can develop a consistent floater game, then we can start looking at a reasonable three-level scorer, not one that would ever be an all-star, but one that you can trust to be consistent. I also like the idea of having a two-guard that can attack closeouts that will cause defenses to rotate, which means then that Ja Morant's off-ball movement's going to bend defenses until they're at the break point, and then Jaren Jackson rolling to the rim or popping is really just going to decimate defensive schemes. I think that's something that the Grizzlies might look to work towards over the next year or two. Melton, to me, strikes me as the best two-guard option out of the current crop. I think that I understand why Grayson Allen's getting the minutes. I understand that the floor spacing that Grayson gives you immediately once you put him on the floor is more valuable right now than what DeAnthony Melton gives you. But Melton definitely strikes me as the ideal, or not ideal, but a very close to ideal partner for Ja, because he'll help cover up Ja's defensive misgivings, and he'll help cause defenses to have to make real tough decisions when Ja's off ball. So long term, I think you should look to develop Melton, but I do understand why Allen's getting the starting spot over him at the moment.
And of course, we didn't think that we would be talking about the two guard position because we assumed that Dylan Brooks would be the guy starting there. We figured out between Kyle and Justice when they came back. And of course, Jaren would be at the four with JV, but Jaren obviously hasn't been back. So adjustments that have been made, but I think one of the better adjustments that have been made is Kyle Anderson at the four, but especially Dylan Brooks at the three, Adam. And Dylan still is his same self. He obviously is the most polarizing player when it comes to Grizzlies fan. He still is himself in which, you know, he probably takes more shots than he should. His offensive decision-making at times can be lacking. But one thing that you cannot question is his defensive effort. But this year, he has taken a noticeable step up in his effectiveness, limiting fouls, disrupting good scores on the outside, as well as leading to turnovers. But when you were analyzing Dylan, you know, looking at his offensive game and his defensive game, it really seems like he's thriving at the three, especially through his all-out effort, but also the impact in that setting that tone for this Grizzlies defense. But long-term, seems like that he's probably best suited for a bench role. How do you think the Grizzlies have utilized him this year, and where do you see his role kind of being going forward for Memphis?
Yeah, I think he's definitely more of a bench guy than a starting guy. I think that his volume shooting would be beneficial against second units more than first units, just because sometimes the talent drop-off on a second unit will allow him a little bit more space, a little bit more room to maneuver. I really like the fact that he's willing to take a couple of steps inside to beat closeouts and to beat guys that are driving on him, to take that mid-range jumper that he seems so comfortable with. He loves those free throw line extended jump shots. And I'm all for those. I know they're not statistically en vogue at the moment, but they're definitely a viable outlet for him. His shooting form is hilarious, right? I mean, it's not the most pretty shooting form. It's quite funny. I think offensively, as a sixth man, he gives you a lot of upside. Defensively, I think it's very similar. He is quite disruptive. I know he was one of the players. Did he have the most fouls last year, or he was like top five in fouls?
The league. He led the league. I believe that him and Jaren were first and second in fouls last year.
Yeah, but that just shows you that how much he's trying to get into guys, how much he's trying to get after it. I mean, I understand that it's frustrating because you're killing defense. Like, if you're defending, then the idea is that you try and stop an advantage, not give an advantage by fouling. But I understand that he's getting after it, and that effort level and hustle level needs to be commended rather than kind of mocked or punished. Because at the end of the day, he's going to learn how to hedge guys and how to slide his feet more. And he's going, and as he does that, the amount of fouls he gives up will drop. I think that he's hindered a little bit by his length. I think if he had a bit more of a bigger wingspan, he'd be a lot better at defending passing lanes, playing as an off-ball guy. Does strike me primarily as an on-ball defender. I do think he's got some upside playing off-ball, especially if he's guarding like a secondary scorer. I don't think he's the guy you want to put on a primary scorer. Secondary or tertiary scorers, I think he could defend off ball quite well. I just want to see him improve his reading of passing lanes, his reading of driving lanes. Sometimes I feel like he can get beat on back cuts, and that happens to everybody. I mean, I'm a Celtics cover, so I see Jaylen Brown getting beat on back cuts when it just should never happen. So that's just something you need to live with when defending NBA level talent. They're going to throw you off guard and back cut you, or they're going to go belly up and then front cut past you and you'll run you into a screen. That's just part and parcel of defending NBA level talent and NBA level schemes. I do like Dylan Brooks as a sixth man, definitely. As a seventh or eighth guy, now you're talking that you've got a real deep bench. If you've got a bench where you can bring Brooks off at seven or eight, and he can take between 6 to 8 shots a night, probably 4 or 5 of those from three, then now you can really provide spacing for your first and second unit. And Brooks, to me, strikes me as a guy that could stick around long-term in the league at that level. But I just do not feel like his upside is as a starting two or three.
Well, I mean, we got this solved, Adam. We'll give you Grayson and 3 firsts for Jaylen Brown, and then he becomes our 7th or 8th guy off the bench. Does that sound like a plan for you?
No.
Completely joking.
How about Tillman, Grayson, Ja Morant, and Jaren Jackson Jr. for Jaylen Brown? I'm only joking.
That's about what it's going to cost now, right? I'll be honest with you. I wrote an article about want to say probably before the season, actually, about guys that the Grizzlies could target after this year, and Jaylen Brown was it. And at that point, you know, we were talking about restricted free agency. I never thought that 12 months later after I wrote that article, I'd be like, you know, if we ever went after Jaylen, they're going to ask for Jaren, and they have every right to. That's how much he's impressed. But with that in mind, this trade deadline is coming up, and the Boston Celtics certainly have been talked about quite a bit. Coming up, I'm going to talk with Adam about what their goals are at the trade deadline, if he thinks moves are made. Maybe an interesting piece from the Grizzlies who could help them out. And we'll get a little bit into tonight's matchup between the Celtics and the Grizzlies. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets combat all forms of ED and can help men gain extra confidence for when it's time to perform. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of our licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. Blue Chew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problems here. Blue Chew's sildenafil and tadalafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. So if you can benefit with extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON at checkout, and just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to receive your first month free, and we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this podcast. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing protein tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate in all of its flavors. And the great thing about Built Bar is that it's a very versatile part of your day. You can have it in the morning as breakfast, you can have it in the afternoon as a snack, or before and after a workout. Whatever you choose to have Built Bar, it's a great health benefit to your day. And the great thing about it is that they have 18 different flavors to choose from. Well, now the time has come to find out which Built Bar is the best. It's Built Bar March Madness. Today's matchup is coconut versus birthday cake. Basically, when it comes to this, nothing beats birthday cake. Sometimes it can be too sweet depending on the flavor, but a lot of times it's clutch. So I personally would go with birthday cake. Go to BuiltBar.com or at @bar_built on Twitter to cast your vote. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com, and check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar in Built Bar March Madness. Get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA Draft with the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. So, Adam, obviously, there, you know, unfortunately for Boston, and I'll tell you the other day, I was surprised. Yeah, I know that Boston had their struggles, but I was surprised that they were at 500. I thought we could about maybe they were, you know, 3 or 4 games above 500, things just weren't going good. But these guys have been at 500 for quite a bit. And so a lot of people were thinking with that huge trade exception from the Gordon Hayward, you know, going to Charlotte this offseason, that the Celtics are probably one of the most likely teams to maybe not only make a move, but, you know, one of the bigger moves of the trade deadline. What do you anticipate when it comes to their movement? And do you feel that they can significantly change their fortunes with a move that might be out there at this trade deadline?
Honestly, I don't anticipate much. That's just the Celtics fans' general feeling at the moment, that any trade that's made will be a smaller one, if there's a trade at all. I do anticipate them trying to hold on to as much of that TPE until the summer, but I just don't see the value in doing that, because a TPE expires. So if you're using it now, you're operating from a position of strength, whereas if you're using it in the summer, you're now operating from a position of weakness, and there may be an overpay that comes with that. If they do decide to swing for the fences, the name that most people are using, floating around, is Harrison Barnes. A secondary name would be Aaron Gordon. a name, talking of, while we're on a Grizzlies podcast, a name that I floated around on my podcast recently was Jonas Valanciunas. I think that Jonas would be a great addition for the Celtics. I'm not sure what it would take to get him or how willing Memphis would be to move on from him, but I do like the idea of bringing in JV.
That was the point that I was going to make, was that, you know, you had thrown that idea around, and at the end of the day, I don't think the Grizzlies are going to trade him, but, you know, for instance, Zach Lowe and Bobby Marr, the Lowe posts were talking about, you know, potentially JV to Charlotte or, you know, other places to where it would make sense. And I think in a vacuum, it does make sense. It would just be hard. You know, I'll be honest, you know, we'll just throw hypotheticals out there. If we were thinking about, you know, a potential trade, something that would interest me is a heavily protected first and maybe Langford. Would take for the Grizzlies to trade off Jonas, they probably have to be overpaid to this culture.
Yeah, and
would that work on you?
I mean, it's something that I kind of explored myself. Would you be willing to give up one of the former lottery picks in Nesmith or Langford plus a first, and then salary matching? So maybe it'd mean a Tristan Thompson gets sent out, or maybe you package a couple of other younger pieces like a Grant Williams together with this deal. And it does make sense to me. I feel like if you guys were, I mean, would Memphis have any interest in replacing Jonas Valanciunas with Tristan Thompson for the defense?
I don't necessarily know if we would have interest in doing that, just because I think that if we were to the point of where we would want to trade Jonas, I think that that would kind of be us indicating, hey, we're ready to move forward with the rest of this year. We're getting Jaron back, we think. Let's see what we've got with BC Tillman. We've also got Killian Tilly and Jonte Porter. Let's really give some run to our young guys. That would be what I would think. So I think while we might take back Tristan Thompson and play him, we probably would also let him, you know, explore other options. I think if we're trading JV, yeah, we'd take Thompson back as, you know, the money matching. But from there, we also would see what we could do with our young core at center.
So that was my entire thoughts around why you'd be willing to move on from Valanciunas, was because of Brandon Clark, because of Tilly, because of Xavier Tillman. Having these guys, to me, means that you've got a really diverse and switchable big man rotation that could really work for you long term, but they're going to need minutes to continue developing. I think Valanciunas would fit right into what Boston are trying to do in terms of, he's not the best three-point shooter, but he's a passable three-point shooter. He can play around the post, he can rebound. I think that if Boston were willing to give up, move on from an Aaron Nesmith, a Grant Williams, and a first, Boston don't really need to match salary because they can split that TP up as many ways as what they need to do. Then I think that if Memphis were interested, I think that would be a very good move that they could explore, and then explore a secondary move to get Tristan Thompson off the books. I just don't see Boston being, I mean, would Memphis be interested in that? A Grant Williams, an Aaron Nesmith, and a first? I mean, the first isn't great. It's a Boston first, so you're looking mid-20s.
Yeah, I think that they would, because that's the thing about it, right? Is that, you know, as we move forward to closer towards contention, you know, Jonas is going to be here through next year. And don't get me wrong, I still don't think Memphis does this because of how much Jonas means to this culture, how reliable we are on his skill sets at times. Yes, he is a bit of a, you know, liability defensively, but this roster loves him and he loves this roster and he means so much. So I think that Memphis still holds on to him. But if you can get a Nesmith and a Grant Williams plus a first, I don't necessarily know if they'll go Grant Williams because it doing a 3-for-1 trade right now would be hard to do with how they've invested in the roster. But if you're talking Nesmith the first and Thompson for money matching, I think Memphis takes a long look at that because you're getting another young shooter you can develop. You do get a first, though it's late. You're coming to a front office that has shown they can generate a lot of value from those late firsts. And then you've got Thompson, who if you want to keep, fine. If you want to buy out, fine, whatever it may be. So I think Memphis, that's the type of deal that would make them look and think. But at the end, I don't think they do it just because of how much JV means to this team.
This is kind of the issue that Boston are running into, and it's always the issue making a midseason trade, and especially this year now the playing tournament's becoming like a legitimate factor, and I think the playing tournament's sticking around now, so I think we'll see less midseason moves moving forward. But this is where Boston are at the moment. Every guy that they're being linked with, any name that anyone throws out, is also a guy that is very important to their team. Harrison Barnes is important to what Sacramento are doing. So according to Sam Amick of The Athletic, Sacramento are looking to add a piece, not remove a piece, and to really make their own playing push. If you look at Orlando, do they really want to give up on Aaron Gordon? Probably. Are they going to get fair value for what they think Aaron Gordon's value is? Probably not. So do they do it? It's a very questionable decision. So Boston are in a really precarious situation where they have to use this TPE. They have to make a move somewhere to improve this team. But finding a willing trade partner and getting good value back, that's where the issues are coming this year. For me personally, I just don't know who looks valuable and who is actually a viable trade-up target for them.
It's going to be crazy, and I know that there's a lot of LaMarcus Aldridge and things like that, but at the end of the day, you want to use that trade exception in as good a way as you can, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Boston looks at. Now, what would be interesting tonight, Adam, is that, you know, it, as much as Boston has struggled at times, I do think that they are a problematic matchup for the Grizzlies. You know, when we played Boston earlier this year, yes, we were without Ja, but we could not stop Jaylen Brown at all. I think he set a career high against us with 42 points. Him and Tatum were just raining the shots. But, you know, when you look at tonight's matchup, the thing that stands out to me about Boston is that they do have their struggles, you know, offensively. But one thing that they also do, they limit assists on defense and they don't turn the ball over a lot on offense. And those are two really, really, really critical factors to the Grizzlies' ability to play successfully. When you look at that specifically, what do you think about tonight's matchup and who do you think kind of has the upper end when it comes to, you know, the strengths of both teams? Who's going to be able to make the game kind of go their way as far as the flow of it goes?
Coming off the last three games that I've seen from Boston, I feel like Memphis are going to come into this feeling quite quietly confident about their ability to implement their game plan. Boston have been really bad at containing dribble drive kickouts this year. They're collapsing on the drive and then really having to scramble to get back out and contest those threes. So with a guy like Ja that can penetrate at will, that can cause, that has the gravity to make those collapses happen with consistency, I think there's going to be open threes available, especially from the weak side corner for the majority of the night. Boston have been very guilty of overhelping on drives this season, especially the last few weeks. And a guy like Grayson Allen, if he's on, he's going to find success off the wing. If you've got a guy that can attack off the catch, then you're going to have success there too. Boston, I do think that Boston have been getting a lot of good results playing secondary attacks off offensive rebounds. Not as good as what they were last year when they had Enes Kanter, that's almost an automatic putback, but they're definitely controlling offensive glass a lot better than what we've seen them do previously. I just don't know if I trust Boston to convert those second chance points. And the last few games, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, both of them have been struggling to find consistency with their shot and their offensive game. And if they haven't figured that out, then I think that Memphis will be able to close out the remaining guys on the floor. I think you'll be able to contain a Marcus Smart. You'll be able to contain a Peyton Pritchard or a Kemba Walker, because Kemba Walker's still adjusting to being a third option instead of being that primary guy. And we're seeing the team really struggle to find out their hierarchy of who it needs to be in offense and what to do when a defense closes out the first action or the second action. Do we go ISO or do we run a third action to try and get Kemba Walker open? These are the things that I think if Memphis can shut down offensive actions and shut them down quickly, you're going to be forcing Boston into a lot of tough contested shots very late in the shot clock, or it'll be very early shot clock pull-ups that aren't always the most successful. And I think you guys could find a lot of success there. If you run a guy like Tillman to stretch the floor or Brandon Clark, then you're going to make it very difficult for a guy like Daniel Tice to be felt in the lanes. So I think that you guys have enough pieces to make it a real difficult night for Boston. I'm not going to go as far as projecting a winner because, one, I don't want to be classed as a homer, and two, if any Celtics fans are listening to this, I don't want to get any angry guys in my mentions there either.
The Celtics matchup kind of reminds me of when we had a back-to-back about a month ago against the Clippers, you know, on a Thursday and Friday night. On that Thursday night, we did a really good job of limiting Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, held them 9-26, and that's what helped us out. Kyle Anderson, Melton, Brooks, Justice Winslow, being able to throw different bodies at those two guys really helped. Well, then the next night, Kawhi was Kawhi. But the big thing is that we couldn't stop the corner threes. So I think that that's the big thing for Memphis is how much energy are they going to have to contest the shots? I think that's going to make a big difference. But another thing about it is that you were talking about it. Boston's done a pretty good job for everybody thinking that there's a lack of presence at center. They've done a really good job when it comes to the rebound productivity at times this year. When it comes to Jonas Valanciunas, you're talking about taking away or there being an offensive rebound. It would seem like there would be an offensive rebound advantage for Boston's opponents, but it may not be. Do you feel like this is going to be another game like we've seen recently where Boston will try to take away Jonas and it will make other players step up? Or do you think Boston, you know, may try to take away Ja specifically? And if we're going to let Jonas dominate, he'd be the route to go. What type of emphasis do you see Boston placing on stopping Jonas?
So Boston generally make an emphasis on stopping the ball more than stopping an individual. Kill the ball, build out to the ball, stop the passing lanes, and then if you take away driving lanes, if you take away early opportunities, then you force teams to go deeper into their sets, and now you can really start rotating and switching. So I think they're going to concentrate more on stopping the ball more than stopping a player. And I like to use impacting the ball more than stopping. Like, they like to impact the ball handler first and then impact the secondary actions second. So I think they're going to focus more on making sure there's no easy cuts, there's no easy post-ups. The Celtics like to front the post quite a lot, so they'll be trying to make life very difficult for Jonas to receive the ball, and then they'll be helping as soon as he gets post position. So I think they're going to be more concerned with driving lanes because that's where they've been the weakest, which means that Ja will probably be more of their focus, but they will like to make sure there's a help defender rotating over whenever Jonas gets a solid post position.
It certainly will be a fun matchup. My hope is that the Grizzlies are able to, you know, at least get shooting from three again. You know, Adam, I don't know if you've been able to catch the Grizzlies, but our three-point shooting, it's about as bad as the grind days. We're not hitting those threes. Tonight we'll have a funny feeling that we will need to. But, Adam, this was even better than I thought it would be. It was absolutely wonderful getting to talk basketball with you. And, of course, Memphis is a place that just absolutely loves getting as much basketball knowledge as they can beyond just the Grizzlies. You do wonderful work. Where can folks find your work at? And do you have any awesome projects coming up? You usually do, but any other projects you may have coming up here in the near future?
Well, thank you very much for having me on to begin with. I've had a great time. I do want to say that it's been a while since I looked at those three guys we spoke about in the second segment. So if I did say anything outlandish, please don't hold that against me.
I can confirm you did not.
There's receipts on the bare necessities. That was a project that we did start, but unfortunately, due to my time difference and my commitments with the Celtics, it wasn't something that I was able to commit to. So we thought it'd be best to stop early rather than build a follower base and then let them down. But there are a few episodes there. But overall, you can find me at Celtics Blog, which is at Celtics Blog on Twitter. I write there and host their podcast three times a week. You can find me at Twitter at Adam Taylor NBA. And then I also do like 15-minute little YouTube shows where we react to the biggest news of the week, and we do that two or three times a week. It's a very surface level show. It's more for fun, just kind of give our thoughts. We don't try and analyze too much, but we like to get a little bit in there. So if you want to check that out and subscribe, that's That B-Ball Show. And thank you again for having me on, man.
Yeah, not a problem at all. And if you'll stick with us for just a second, again, Adam, if you want to know about the Celtics, that's great. I wish that time would allow for Adam to give his perspective on all the teams. That's how insightful and valuable his mind is. Just a wonderful follow. So if you get the chance to certainly follow his great work, you can follow our show, Locked On Grizz, on Twitter, myself at StatsSAC. You can find the Celtics Blog podcast anywhere podcasts are available, along with Locked On Grizzlies, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you choose to listen. For Adam Taylor, my name is Sean Coleman. Go Grizzlies. Fun game tonight against the Celtics. We'll again talk to Adam soon, I'm sure. But until then, hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.